What's up, OAUXers? Before we jump into this really illuminating conversation with certified OAUX strategist Elena Haskins, I have got a big, exciting announcement. I've just launched a brand new YouTube channel with my fellow OAUXer and my dear friend, Allie O'Fisher. So you might know Allie from a previous episode of the podcast or from OAUX Happy Hour or maybe just the community at large. But basically, she's awesome and we make a pretty dynamic duo. So we decided to team up for this channel that we are calling Ooks, We Did It Again. Okay, so Ooks is, I often say it's the British pronunciation of OAUX because, hi, Imogen Levy, she started calling it Ooks, and then I think everybody in the UK basically calls it Ooks. So this channel is all about us OAUXing, or Ooksing, again and again, some of the biggest players in the industry. We're going after Google, we're going after Amazon, we're going after LinkedIn and Apple and Etsy, Instagram. And so on this channel, we are going to be fully focused on exposing those four horsemen of the internet apocalypse, the masked objects, the broken objects, the isolated objects, the shapeshifters, and how they are showing up in these applications that millions of people are using, that we're using every day. And we're basically going to help give language to what is wrong with these experiences. These UX fails, we sometimes call them unintuitive objects. These are the UX fails that we absolutely love to hate. So we, Allie and I, just have so much fun going through, picking apart these apps, exposing all the unintuitiveness about them, really showing you why it's unintuitive, and we describe how to fix these fails as well. So in our first episode, I bring Allie a broken object from Google Photos, and in our second episode, Allie brings me the Amazon Alexa app, and we find all four in the Amazon Alexa app. We find all four of these four horsemen of the internet apocalypse, like a game of bingo or something. They're all showing up there. So those are our first two episodes. And actually, this afternoon, after I'm recording this intro, this afternoon, we are recording our third episode, and I'll be bringing Allie an isolated object in LinkedIn. So that should be out in, I don't know, a few weeks. So basically, what we're doing, our schedule right now is kind of like a post every other Thursday, I think is what we're trying to do. I will bring Allie an unintuitive object, then Allie brings me an unintuitive object, and we go through it together. So please go over to OAUX.com/OWDIA. That's for Ooks, We Did It Again. OAUX.com/OWDIA to get to this new channel and to subscribe, okay? So we're really just getting going. So subscribing, watching those first few videos, commenting, liking those first few videos, doing all the things, that really helps us gain some traction. So I'd really, really appreciate it going over there and giving us some love. Okay, so switching gears back to the podcast. Today, I've got a conversation with Elena Haskins, and she was one of my superstars in Cohort 8 and just has such a beautiful mind. I know you're going to learn so much hearing how she's brought OAUX to her clients with Orca Sprints and how she's using OAUX to help her save time and communicate with everyone on the team so much better. So let's go ahead and jump into the episode. Welcome to the Object-Oriented UX Podcast, a podcast about tackling complexity head-on, gracefully organizing massive amounts of information, and designing scalable, future-proof, and of course, naturally intuitive object-oriented user experiences. An OAUXer is a powerful blend of information architect, business analyst, facilitator, and UX strategist. If this sounds like you or what you aspire to, you are so in the right place. I'm Sophia Prater, UX designer, chief evangelist of Object-Oriented UX, and your host. Let's jump into it. Elena Haskins, welcome to the OAUX podcast.
Oh my God, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's great to have you here. So for those that don't know Elena, she is a certified OAUX strategist. She is also the founder and lead UX designer at Annalay Consulting.
Annalay Studio. UX Studio. It's just Anale, like Anale, UX but Studio. I usually give context.
At Anale. Yeah, I've been, so I'm officially rewired UX Studio, but sometimes I'm just like, it's just rewired. And I absolutely love what you have on LinkedIn that you're focusing on designing SaaS products for startups so intuitive that users feel effortlessly at home.
Because I feel like, especially for startups, you need to just grab the user's attention and make them feel like the tool's for them. Because then everything is so noisy out there, and now you're just trying to create another tool. You really need to make sure your customers feel seen from the get-go. And that's why I want to lean into that. And what better way than OOUX?
Yeah. So you've been running these Orca sprints. You've been using OOUX with your clients. So what I'm most curious to know right now is how is OOUX helping you help your clients create these products that make users feel effortlessly at home?
I think the biggest part is just setting the stage for myself, like jumping into a bunch of different kinds of client projects. There's a bunch of different domains you have to learn. You know, you're working with people who are industry experts, and I'm coming in fresh, but I need to get to that level quickly. So when I'm using the Orca sprints, it's mostly helping me get in context, being, oh, what is this? How does this connect? But then when the founders are talking it through, you know, it kind of opens up doors for them. So then it kind of sets both of us up for success. So then as we're designing things out, things just make more sense for everyone. And there's just that clarity and, you know, all the other OOUX things with, oh, relationships make sense and attributes. But the biggest thing is just getting everyone on the same page as early as possible.
Yes. Oh my gosh. So valuable. And getting to be able to ask those questions, also just like getting to understanding, getting that shared understanding. And that just speaks directly to like, why I started using this and why I started building this methodology is because I was just thrown into the deep end and I needed to get understanding as a consultant, as you said, like just working on all these different projects, and there's a lot of complexity in a lot of them, and you're expected to get up to speed so quickly. Have you found that your clients are kind of impressed by like how quickly you can get up to speed?
I feel like it's something they take a little bit for granted, where they're like, they forget that other people don't know it, but then yeah. I'll come in hot with some questions and they're like, oh yeah, we didn't even think about that. Okay. That's cool. So it definitely gives brownie points. No one's ever been like, oh my God, I can't believe you knew that. But it's definitely implied whether like, it's kind of paused like, oh yeah, that is how we are set up. Okay. Yeah. Good question.
Yeah. So it's more like those really good questions, or even questions that make them pause too.
Yes, I'm like obsessed with the questions that are coming out of the OOUX process. Like that's like my biggest takeaway, because it just opens up all the doors. You know, it's not all about like the documentation or, you know, all process, but it's like, how can we even set the stage to see what we're missing? Because I feel like the way I used to approach regular UX is I'm just like, well, you know, you kind of take what the client gives you and that's all you have. You're just like, this is how it works because this is how they said it works. And this is what the customer said they might want it to work. But now I can actually pick apart and say, hey, this doesn't actually make any sense, but why would anyone catch that? That's why they hired you.
Exactly. So having this process, like this is, it's so funny that we're getting onto this. So I've been playing with our Notion template, our Orca Hub Notion template, and recently introduced question as an object. Shout out to Allie O'Fisher. She had that idea. Ooh, and at first that. I was like, because before we just had like a little question check mark, like, do you have a question on this object or this attribute or this CTA? And then you could filter your O's, your R's, your CTAs by if there's a question on there, and then you could go into the comments. And so we elevated question into an object. So now it has status and it automatically connects to whatever piece you had that question on. I know. We got a little question
level.
Yes. But it's so funny because that is the product, not the product. That is so much of the output of what you get in the Orca process is the questions that come out of it. And then of course the answers that you end up getting by being able to ask those really good questions.
Yeah. It just forces you not to take anything as face value, which you shouldn't be doing anyways as UX designers, but especially when you're moving quick. I feel like it's easy to kind of fall into that habit of, okay, I know we need to get this shipped. This is what they told me. Let's just roll with it. but this forces you to pause and be like, wait, we can't roll with it because there's like 10 questions that like will not leave my head unless we talk about it.
And that will impact the design. I mean, simple questions on cardinality, like does X have one of Y or does X have many of Y? Like that is going to impact the design. So yeah, and you mentioned in some notes that like this process is helping avoid these huge setbacks by being able to ask these questions earlier and like discover some of the use cases too. Those like saving of the setbacks, is that also something that you feel like your clients have taken for granted, or are they like loving you for this, being like, oh my gosh, it's so good we're talking about this now and it's not coming up later on?
Yeah, there's definitely been those like light bulb moments where everyone's like, oh my gosh, that was a close one, you know? And especially when I'm talking to developers where we'll talk about something that easily could get out of hand and just cause a lot of tech debt. And they're like, oh, wait, good catch. And I'm like, yes, I want to be like that outfield person who, you know, everyone hits a home run, like no one can get it. And you're like, I got it. It's fine. Like, leave it to me. We're just going to snag it before it even becomes anyone's problem.
And on as a UX designer, I mean, that feels so good when somebody says, like, when you know you made a good catch. And then also, like, I love getting recognized. Like, when they're like, that was a really good catch there. Or like, ooh, we hadn't thought about that. Like, asking the question that nobody else has thought to ask, but then recognizes, like, damn, that's a really good question. And it's so good that we're talking about this now and not down the line, which like you kind of touched on this before of like, that's kind of how I was doing UX before, is it was like, you just take what people give you because you don't really know what you don't know. You don't have like a tool to excavate all of those questions and bring them forward. That's what the Orca process does, is it excavates like a, it's like an archaeology tool, basically. Like, what do we not know? We have so many metaphors, a floodlight, archaeology tool, but it just helps bring a time travel tool, helps bring everything to the forefront. And it like just saves so much time because you're not worrying about all that later on when you're like deep in Figma screens or something. So going back to like what UX looked like before, and kind of before you found OUX, like, can you tell me a little bit about like what that frustration was like, or like why were you like kind of searching for a better way?
Everything just felt really siloed. That has always been something that I found really frustrating. And there was this moment I was working on this large enterprise thing, and this was when I was in the midst of the certification program, and I was like, I got so mad when I was doing this because I kind of knew about the tools, and I'm like, this would not be a problem if we knew about this. And so I was working on this really large project where for healthcare, basically healthcare tools, like you get all the band-aids. It's where all the doctor's offices order all their tools from.
Okay.
And so like really large scale, it's like, I wouldn't even really know about it, but it's a big company. And I remember I was working on this whole project, like a table for a bunch of listings for just like in the catalog. And then, you know, we finished that ticket, and then I moved on to someone that was assigned by someone else. And it was the exact same one, but it's a completely different sprint. And I was like, wait, we just made this like literally a week ago, but there was absolutely no communication. And they're like, oh, well, this is just how this, we just need this one updated on a different page. And I was like, we just made this. And they're like, well, we can't really use it because, you know, a different person is working on it. And I was like, I made this. It's not even like a hyperbole. I made this exact same table. And if we just had the object of product, like a product card, this would not happen. And I'm like, I've only been on this project, I was just like a freelancer I've been here for like 2 months. There's been people working on this for 3 years. And I'm like, how many times has this happened? And that was like kind of like my tipping point of how so many projects you're doing double, triple work because people are making the same objects over and over and over without any discussion of crossover. And so I feel like that's how a lot of my projects were. And you just kind of sludge through it because you're like, oh, well, you know, we got to work on this flow. We got to work on this flow. That's just how it is. The client wants us to prioritize this, but we're not, that's just like how it is. We are just used to it being horrible.
Well, I mean, again, like going back to like in your day to day, that's so frustrating. Like that doesn't feel good. It doesn't feel to be feel like you're not working as efficiently as you could be working, or feeling like, I mean, that also to me feels like my when that, because that's happened to me, of course, in the I remember that happening in the past, and like it makes you feel like your time isn't really valued when you're having to do these things over and over again, or it doesn't feel that efficient or effective, or like, and it also doesn't create the best design too, because then you get introduced shapeshifters, of course, and you introduce all sorts of inconsistencies. So you actually are creating design that is not as elegant as it could be. And so we just touched on two ways that OUX and the Orca process helps you save time. Like, one, it's going to bring the questions forward sooner rather than later. And then two, it's going to help. It's going to just by like breaking down some of those silos. So you're not doing this rework, or you're not literally designing the same freaking thing twice. Yeah, like, do you have you experienced that? Just like, kind of like, because one thing that people say, the reason I bring this up is like, I hear a lot of like, oh, we don't have time. We don't have time for something like Orca. I mean, like the 15 steps seems so scary. Like, we don't have time to do that. We need to get to screens by yesterday. Like, what would you say to somebody who's like, we don't have time for OUX?
I've definitely heard that before. I would say, well, why would you rather us take like, just a few hours now to even just talk about this? Because the way that I'm approaching it is, how do I even make it bite-sized? Like an Orca sprint, it doesn't have to be a full week. Even if we just do it for a few hours and sit down and this is all we're thinking about, you can get light years ahead if we had just, kind of went forward and didn't even address any of this. So I would say getting everyone onto the same page and understanding how the system works in like a day, is that worth it to you? If we can just set that aside. And I mean, if you really need, you could like start pulling numbers, like how many hours it would take to do a certain thing. And then if you make a mistake, how many extra hours that would be. But usually I would just approach it by telling them, like kind of minimizing the commitment. I usually just kind of downplay it, honestly. Because like once you're in the sprint, you're in the sprint. You're not gonna be like, we're gonna stop halfway. But I'm like, all I need is 3 hours of your time. And like I don't like overpromise anything, but I'm just kind of like, listen, these are we can we're you're gonna be able to walk away with knowing what you want to prioritize, like in a general sense, and just having a little more clarity with all the different teams. And that's the angle that I go at it, knowing that once they're in it, it might open up doors, but like I can't sell from that perspective, being like, you'll want it later, but I need you to know the bare minimum right now.
That's beautiful. So when the 3 hours, you're like, I just need 3 hours from you. And I've played this game before, but like, I also will do it where it's like, I just need this half day with you. And then like, and it kind of like sells it a little bit. And it's like, gets you your like little pinky toe in the door. And then you can usually get some more time, because it's like, you're not going to figure out all out. And people realize, oh, this is creating really good, important discussion. Like everything that we were talking about in the beginning, like, all the questions that come up, and all the surprises that come up, and all the great discussions. And they're like, well, we can't, leave this nested object matrix half done. Like, they're sort of getting so much out of it. So what is, when you do just have 3 hours, like, kind of walk us through that. Like, how do you prepare for that? And what does that 3 hours usually look like?
Okay, so this is like what I'm honing in on. So I'm so glad you asked that, because I want to try to make this like my bread and butter, where it's like kind of in and out, like let's just set the stage for you. So to prepare, usually what I'll do is I'll just ask them in the beginning, just kind of walk through their problem, like on a separate call, and I just look through their website. So usually I'll do the noun foraging, but I want to have a little bit noun foraging in the process so they at least understand the objects. Because when I just throw objects in there and they're like, yeah, sure, it just doesn't hit the same as if they at least tried. Usually I'll pre-prepare, this is what my recommended like seven are, and then I'll have them narrow it down. I'll be like, can you think of a few objects based off of the definition that I just told you? And then they're like, oh, maybe this and this. I'm like, yeah, okay, I love that. So then I can at least figure out
Wait, so
where
you'll
are
give them the
their
definition and ask them what the object is?
like I'll usually say this is an, so an object are like the entities that build your system. Okay. We like okay. to think of them as nouns.
Oh, you define so, what an object is. Okay. Yeah. I was like, that's actually a really cool idea to be like, give the definition and be like, what would you call that thing?
No,
okay,
yeah.
cool. That would be, cool. So you're that would defining be what an object is first, but you have in your back pocket, you're like top seven.
Yeah. Like they don't know that I already basically figured out what we're going to focus on, but I want them to get, I want to get that buy-in that they're like, I really want to focus on these objects because I'm flexible to move what we focus on because they know their product or their concept best. But usually I'll have a better idea of like literally what an object is. So I'll let them kind of narrow it down. I'm like, what do you think, you know, the top three are? And then, but that'll be like a small portion. That's maybe like, you know, like 20 minutes just so they can at least feel like they're a part of this. Mm-hmm. And then I usually try to do the rest of the parts pretty evenly, like about 45 ish minutes. I've been changing the order still just to see like what makes the most sense, because sometimes explaining the attributes in the beginning is really helpful with the objects because it gives them the like flesh, the flesh of all the objects. And then I can start going to the mm-hmm. relationships because I've kind of done 50-50. I'll do the relationships before, like, you know, in the normal Orca order. Mm-hmm. And then other times I'll do the attributes actually second. And actually both have been pretty good. But I need to get back to like explaining the relationships a little bit better because I find people get confused about that. So it's kind of like a mix of like showing some examples and then having them do it. And a lot of the structure that I'm playing with is like, how do you even let it be interactive in a way that they aren't just running off getting really confused? Like, how do you make it so specific of you're only doing this one task mm. right now? Don't even think about all of this. What is this one? You need to answer this one question I'm putting in front of you right now. So I don't know if that answered your question, but yeah. Basically, yeah.
Well, I have more questions.
Yeah.
I have more questions.
That's like the general structure.
I have sure. a follow-up question, which yes. is how, if you're doing, like, usually are you thinking like seven objects is like what you're working with, or is
no,
it?
No, I try to narrow to four.
Okay. Because yeah. I was about to say, how are you doing a nested object matrix with seven objects in 45 minutes? Because I want to know your secret. Because usually like in my Orca sprints, if I do have a week, we usually do about 10 objects is what we'll focus mm-hmm. on. That's usually a good scope, but the nested object matrix can easily take a day and a half. Like we spend a while on that. And to like your point of like knowing exactly what their task is, like, you know, going through the nested object matrix, it's like, okay, we're thinking about this one relationship right here, this one direction. And we just yeah. we're stepping through it one cell by one cell. If seven objects, that is 49 cells.
No, usually just four. So depending on how many people are in it. So I've done this with just one person where it's just the founder and uh-huh. we're going through this. And I've also okay. done it when there were nine people. So, which was obviously very different, but the very first one I had done was with like two separate sessions with just one founder. So usually I would like have people split up, and then with the bigger group, I would have them do it in groups.
Oh,
and
so you have them together. Doing it. They're actually yeah. doing it. Oh.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I'm not doing it and having them like comment on it. I'm like, okay, I'll model an example. And now you need to do, you're handling these two objects. I'm handling these two objects, go. And then we'll come in. And then after I'll be like, okay, let's talk through this. What kind of questions came up like that? And I mean, it's obviously not as thorough as yours that are all day. Like we're not thinking of every nitty gritty relationship, but at least it's broaching where are the general relationships that, how do they sit into the system that will start opening up where we need to spend more time later.
Yeah. Yeah, that is brave that you're having them do a nested object matrix. I have found that's tough. That is tough to get people to understand that, even with a bunch of UX designers in a workshop where it's like a really simple design challenge. Sometimes the nested objects, they can get flipped and turned around and like questions on cardinality. So usually I am walking them through, you know, like, okay, right here. Does this thing have, you know, does a product have one order or many orders or whatever. And then we kind of flesh it out that way. But yeah, I can imagine that you would get some really interesting stuff from them doing it. And also them like getting more buy-in in the process and getting their hands dirty.
It's been really interesting to see who picks up on it, which has been really helpful for just from a teaching perspective of how to explain certain things. So the example that I usually go to is like a dog owner and a dog. And so because the reason I like to use that one is because I'm like, okay, a dog could be homeless. And they're like, oh, it could be homeless. And I'm like,
bad example.
They're like, a dog has zero to, I'm like, a dog could have zero to one owners. And then usually I wait for someone to say, what if, you know, they're like dating someone or they're married. And I'm like, oh, good point. Okay, a dog could have zero to many owners. And I'm like, they could be joint custody with the friends, or it could live on the street. So it's zero to many. And they're like, oh, okay. And then I would say, oh, okay, so let's do it reverse. And then they start opening. They're like, okay, well, I guess the owner has zero to many dogs. I'm like, okay, yeah. So like, let's break down the dogs. Zero. That's why they're on this app, because they don't have one, or their dog needs a friend. And so I think breaking that down, because a lot of people have pets, has been the most helpful one. Like once I say the dog one, everyone's like, oh, okay, I get it. And usually I've actually had pretty high success rate of people. I don't know the exact percentage, but people finally like, oh, okay, cool. I can do it. And then I do like a teacher to kids, and that's the one that they have to fill in. And it's been about like, I think 100% success after with that one.
What's up, OUXers? There is something very important that I have neglected to do in the first 50 episodes of this podcast, and that is to implore you, dear listener, for a review. So here I am, asking ever so nicely for you to drop a rating and review of the OUX podcast into either Apple Podcasts or Spotify. This can really help us spread the OUX love. So if you've gotten any value from OUX and the Orca process, which I'm assuming you have since you're here, I'd be so appreciative for a few minutes of your time. Okay, so how to do this? Don't actually go click on the rating metadata, because that would be way too intuitive. On Apple Podcasts, go to the podcast detail page, scroll to the bottom, and you'll see some big stars down there that you can add stars. And then underneath that, there is another little link that says create a review. So that would be amazing. And on Spotify, you've got to do this on the mobile. On Spotify mobile, go to the 3-dot menu on that detail page and hit rate. And actually on Spotify, even on an episode detail, you can leave a comment there too. If you scroll down on the episode detail, there'll be something that says something like, how did you like this episode? And feel free to put your thoughts there. Thank you so much, and happy OUXing. So we're going to have OUXers across the world are going to be using the dog and dog owner example to teach their clients and product people how to understand cardinality. That's a great one. Okay. So I am curious to talk about what is your personal favorite part of the process? Like, what do you find the most fun when you're doing, not necessarily even the most effective, but maybe they correlate, but like, what do you just find really fun about going through Orca? And I feel like before actually you get it, I'll give you a second to think about this. We probably, for anybody who is just jumping into the podcast, Orca stands for Objects, Relationships, Calls to Action, and Attributes. That is the Orca process. It is how we do object-oriented UX. So in case you were like, Orca? Whales?
You could do what? Ooh, sorry. Have you ever Orca like a whale-related thing?
I have looked for a really good Orca, like Save the Orcas nonprofit.
I want to do that.
Found a really good one, but that would be awesome. OUX practice day. I'm wanting to do that. I keep talking about it, but I'm actually going to do it this year. I really want to do these OUX practice days where OUXers can get together and we'll have a design challenge from a nonprofit and we just like go through it in small groups. And that would be so fun to do one for like
So meta.
Save the Whales. Maybe not. Maybe it won't be specific for orcas. Maybe I just need to go a little bit broader, open up my level of specificity a little bit, and go up to just whales and not particularly orcas. But yeah, that would be
Bonus
fun.
points for Orca.
But yeah, I am. That would be really good.
Let's see. I would say, like, we kind of covered it, but I'm like obsessed with the questions, not only because it's helpful, but it just like it makes you feel so powerful, like when you're going through. Like, I feel so smart when I'm coming up with the questions. I'm like, well, what does this mean? And this implication. And like, I'll surprise myself too with some of the questions. I'm like, oh shoot, that was a good one. Like, I
Yeah.
didn't even. Yeah, what is the implication of that? And it's like, when you exercise a lot and then you finally are like super strong and you go to pick something up and you're like, I know that there was a time when you wouldn't be able to, and you feel it in your body, that growth, like the physical growth. I feel that when I'm asking a good question where I'm like, yo, old Elena would not like, she would never think of that question. So I just get so geeked out with it, and like that's a huge selling point that I use when I talk to people, and that's a lot of the content that I'm trying to make around on LinkedIn is just show examples of questions that I started coming up with by doing the relationship step where I'm like, ooh, did you think of that? Didn't think so. Orca.
Yes, and you too. It really does turn you into like feeling like this superhero, being able to find these golden nuggets that like, old Elena would never have figured out. And like obviously nobody else is asking
Yeah,
either, right? Like,
true.
old Elena and nobody else, and the people that have been, on the team for 3 years haven't even thought about
Yep.
it, right? Yeah, I've had stakeholders and subject matter experts being like, finally, somebody asking me like really good questions, or like really like looking at me and being like, nobody has ever asked me that. Like usually when I get interviewed, it feels like such a waste of time,
Yeah.
because they're just asking me like these really high level questions, like, what do you think the goal of the user is? Like,
Yep.
like stuff like that. Like we could just find out, right? Or that we already have in UX research, or like it's already there, or it's like, so really being able to like have this like scalpel, more metaphors to like get to really get to those really juicy questions and like the kind of like the heart of complexity too.
Like, there's not a better feeling than like, pulling up to the meeting with like your list and you're like, I just have a few things to go over. And then you're just like, boom. And they're like, ooh, okay. And then it's just such a fruitful conversation. And you're not just going through the normal, like, okay, like what pain points do you think they're experiencing? Or, just tell me about your day to day. It's like, okay, well, here it is. And they're like, ooh, okay, I love this. And I'm like, I love this too.
Yeah, because you'll get to that. Like the what is the pain point? Like that's important to know, of course. But like when you're sometimes like when you're in these meetings and it does feel like I think that a lot of business folks have been burned a little bit by UX because we do kind of we can tend to ask these like a little bit more fluffy questions. And a meeting or a workshop can feel like, where is this actually going? And so when we can come in with questions about cardinality, questions about synonyms, like are like okay, are these two things the same thing or are these different things? Then it just feels like it feels so good because you know that they're like having like one of the most effective meetings that they've had in a long, long time.
I was working with this one client. The thing with the definition always gets me because it's really funny when people are like, oh, it's just, and then they can't answer it. Like, it's a simple definition because I remember like, oh, what's the difference between an article and a blog, and I think it was like a document, something. It was something like that. And one person said so confidently, like, oh, this is what an article is. And then someone was like, wait, no, it's not. And I'm like, and you just kind of sit back and like kind of let the politics kind of handle themselves. And then you jump in when you're like, okay, I gotta do my job. And I'm like, okay, I gotta facilitate this conversation. I'm like, okay, if that's how you're defining article, that sounds a lot like a blog, then what's a blog? And they're like, well, it's this. And someone else pipes in, no, it's not. And I'm like, okay. I'm really glad we're talking about this. And then all of a sudden it's been kind of a long time. And they still are like kind of fighting about it. And you're like, okay, this is a lot.
Yeah.
But it just starts adding texture to things that are just assumptions that definitely are going to be problematic. So, yeah.
Some of the best conversations that I've had have been about this. Like with, I talk about the one with Delta all the time with like,
I use that example.
The flight versus the leg in the segment was a really interesting one.
Yes.
Like there's flights and then there's trips. Okay. That was pretty easy to differentiate a flight versus a trip and then airport mm-hmm. versus origin and destination, which is a pair of airports. And then we have like, is a hub airport the same as an airport? It's a junction object between the airline and the airport. Like, yeah, I know. So fun. But like that leg in segment, I just like that will go down in my mind and like my professional, you know, professional history of the leg versus segment conversation. And it was just so funny to see like how people were arguing about it.
And then
people that have been like working together for 7, 8, 9 years, you know, like they'd be like, oh, you think it's that versus that?
Mm-hmm.
And then at Autodesk, like design versus file. Like, what is a file? Wait, what is a file?
Mm-hmm.
what is the design the same thing as the file? Like, what people are like, there's like literally heads going up and down and heads going right and left all in the same room. And so my question for you is like, when that starts happening and people start arguing and they can't get to they're, you know, figuring out what the things are is a struggle. Do you have any tips on facilitating that? Do you like set a timer? Like, what do you do to kind of like put a pin in it and move on? Or like, how do you handle that?
Well, the biggest thing, not just with that situation, but all facilitation, is I always like to set expectations. So with the timer thing, I'll be like, okay, we do have a lot of other things we need to cover. So let's just take some time. And yeah, I'll say a specific amount, but I won't be like, okay, we only have 5 minutes to talk about this, but I'll kind of like put a cap on it so they can say, okay, this is important, but we also need to keep going. So I'm also like, hey, hurry this up. By the end of today, I want to make sure that we are aligned on the definitions for blah, 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 but let's make sure we can keep going. And so we can get to this next phase. So the first thing is just the expectations. Now that I know that sometimes people are going to disagree on that, like sometimes I'll have everyone write their own definition. Like if that chaos starts happening, I'll be like, okay, like, let's just take a minute. Everyone jot down like how you would define this and then let's talk about it. Because there might be an opportunity where we can just get rid of one of these objects. Because if we're aligning that these are the same, do we even need it? And so you're like, I don't really know if we need it. I'm like, I'm not trying to get rid of your stuff, but I'm saying it's less to manage, less to like upkeep, less to do. And they're like, yeah, that's kind of nice. And you know, you got to go towards the person who owns it. And I'm like, it's usually in this case, it was like the content person who has to maintain and govern everything. And I'm like, hey, don't you think it would make sense if like we didn't have this option? Like, yeah, it would. So that's usually how I do it. It's like give everyone that ownership to at least say their piece. Because that's also a thing is just give it. Sometimes people just have dirty laundry and it's not even related to Orca. They just need a platform to say something and they've just never had it before. So I actually, the one with like the 9 people, this was actually my first large scale one that I did. So I was honestly kind of like improvising as I went, and we met 3 times. And every morning I rewrote the entire like curriculum for the whole day because it had changed so much based off of the first day.
Yeah.
And the last day I ended up just making up the session where people could just say what was on their mind, but in related to the objects. I was like, I want to know how these objects play a role to your job and what your pain points are. And so I'm like, okay, so if you're handling art, so it was like articles, blogs, events. And I'm like, okay, so in this column, just say all the things you love about it related to your job. And then all the things that you're like questions that you're having and challenges. And people just went to town. Like they just needed to say something. They're like, articles are so annoying to maintain because, you know, there's so many rules or, you know, the brand guidelines. No one even follows the brand guidelines. They look so ugly. And I'm like, okay, this is great.
That is amazing. I am totally stealing that, like having a vent session around the objects. Like, and I love, like, also, like, what do you love about this object? How do you feel about this object emotionally? Like literally a therapy session with an outline of the objects. That is genius. I love that so much.
It was because the first, it was totally like a political thing. And I'm like, okay, the only way I can make this, like, if they have a bad time, it's going to reflect me, even if it's not on me. You know, it's everything comes down to the facilitator, even though it's that's not my problem, but that's just they're going to remember it. Right. And I remember the first day I like freaked out because a person had DM'd me and was like, I don't even, why am I in this workshop? And I was just like, I was like, it was like the marker. And I was like, really need you in this place. And I was like, no, totally fine. And then who went to town on that event on that third day? She had so many things to say. And she's like, that was, and then I got a review and I knew who wrote it. It was anonymous, but I could tell who wrote what. And I was like, she loved it. She's like, I love the workshop. This is super helpful, very impactful for my job. And I was like, okay, good.
Wonderful. And I look at the other thing I just want to highlight is how you had to rewrite the script or like rewrite the agenda. And that is something that like I have been realizing as well. It's like I give them the agenda and I have been trying to frame it that like this is going to change.
Oh my
And
gosh, yeah.
you do not want me to keep this really static because this is collaborative. Like we're working together and I have no idea what is going to happen once I get like all 10 of you in the room. If I kept day two exactly, or even if I kept the afternoon exactly as what's on paper, as what, you know, it said at 8 a.m. or not, let's be honest, at 10 a.m.
Do that
We get this
to
started at like 10 a.m. At 10 a.m., then like I'm going to be rewriting stuff during lunch. Like that is what's going to happen. And then day two, like things are going to shift around. Orca might become okra. Like that's happened before, or Orac or something like that. Like we do, like to your point, it's like depending on the client, depending on the vibe, depending on the kind, actually the project too. Like, ooh, we like really need to get into attributes because sometimes it's relationships that help you figure out that two things are different or help you figure out like, ooh, we need a tree system or a junction object because we actually need to put an extra object in here. And then you can get to the attributes and realize, oh, I'm running the exact same attributes for these two things. Like this can be combined. So even you might do a little bit, you might do some of the nested object matrix and be like, let's just do the attributes for these two objects. And so you can even like bounce back and forth between them. It's flexible. And you want to frame it to be flexible because sometimes a client or your team could be like, whoa, why are we going so off script? And certain personalities are going to feel really nervous about that. So just letting them know, like, it's a feature, not a bug. If I'm rewriting the script.
You know, okay, so it's funny you say that of like how people get a little nervous, and I'm curious what your take is because I haven't like picked how I want to approach this as my standard, but I've done where I introduce Orca as a whole in the beginning, and I've also done where I only am introducing each concept as it comes. And I've heard so many mixed feelings, so that's why I'm like, I still don't really know what I want to do because there's some, and it really depends on the person too. Like, and I did it back to back with a founder and a founder, just them. For one, I said, here, I introduced all of Orca and I said, this is objects, relationships, because I like context. Like the more context, I'm like, yes, give it to me. But they were just like, I what does this have to do with the C? And I'm like, we're not doing the C right now, we're doing the O. And they're like, but attributes. And then other people are like, I want to know what the rest is. And they're like, I'm just excited, I want to see the rest. And I'm like, okay, well, we're not gonna do that. We're only gonna focus on the O right now. So it's been really interesting seeing both perspectives.
Yeah, I always do an overview. Like I do like a 30-minute talk before we like the beginning of day one is like But I have a little bit more time too. So,
Fair, yeah.
but even you could do an overview, like a 5-minute overview of just like, this is what ORCA stands for, like that we eventually did do. And like, this is what we mean by these things. But yeah, it might be different personalities. So just like, just that kind of, shout out to Kathy Sierra, as always, badass, making users awesome. She talks about like just in time information. Like when you are teaching something, like making sure they like are getting the information just when they need it. So I think it's maybe like a balance of that. Like here's the overview, but then like the how, you know, like here's the why, right? Like here's the ORCA, here's why this is like this really nice little framework that we're going to be going through. And then we're going to give you the what just in time.
Okay, so about the why, this is not necessarily related to the Orca sprints, but more like a detailed object guide. One of the things I struggled with that group of nine people was I didn't tee it up about how it specifically impacted each person, because I was just like, this is how it impacts the organization. But then, then I have people DMing me, well, it's just that one person saying, I don't understand why I'm here. I'm a marketer. And so the next day I started and I was like, here's how it impacts all of you individually. So then, when I made an object guide for them, I made it like a very extensive one, which now in hindsight, it was too extensive. And I don't even think they use it because I just gave them way too much. But I broke every single object section by position. And I wrote a detailed list of how each one impacts every single person and their job. And so then when I sent it to everyone, they were able to see, like I walked through with all of them, I'm like, here's how it helps marketing, here's how it helps content creation, here's how it helps the CFO. And I don't know if I would go as all in next time, but it was just interesting to see how you do need to get that buy-in even when you're in the process.
Yeah, that's really interesting. That like what I will do sometimes with the object guide is create different views if I'm doing it in, like, did you do it just as one big document?
I did do different views, but it wasn't even just the tabs changed. I made a it's a Notion. I made full pages. I basically duplicated the object guide and just changed the filters specifically just for each category of people. So there is no confusion. And I made a huge thumbnail that was like, this is just for content. This is just for this. These are all the O's, all the R's for you.
And you think it was just too long
I
for
think
those
they just
people for it to
didn't
be said?
understand it. I think they had. So this wasn't even for software. This was for like a marketing site and content site for like a nonprofit. And I think it was just not it for software would probably have made more sense, but I was just so excited. This was like after I'd finished the certification and it was like my first like really big client for that. 'Cause all the other times I was doing the smaller sprints, I was like, yes, I'm gonna do all this. And I think it was definitely a good lesson of you really need to tailor what the steps you're doing to the people. And I that's stuff that you've talked about and we did in the advanced training where you're like, you don't have to do it all. And I've definitely been that type of person who's like, I have to do it all. And I'm like, don't do it all.
Yeah,
Don't do it all.
during the advanced training, I was speaking directly to you. No, I was
Yeah, I was
speaking.
hu no,
We're
I
all
was
kind of like that. We're
like
like,
I was
just because
humbled.
you can, it doesn't mean you should. And that was a big theme of the advanced training is like, and this is for anybody using the OUX process of like, do what is useful. Like, you don't have to tick all the boxes. It's like, but also keep an open mind of what might be useful. So that idea of like, putting your little pinky toe down the rabbit hole and like looking around the corner and be like, do I need to go to this rabbit hole? And just being like, nope, coming back up for air. Do not need to go down that rabbit hole. That is for another day, another dollar, another day. So going back to the certification, like you were so jazzed about it. What was your favorite part about the certification? And like that process of going through, you were in cohort 8, like going through with like all those amazing people. And actually, Quick question. Were you part of the self-paced? Did you do the self-paced master class first, or you just jumped straight into the
No,
certification?
I was just like, let's go.
Let's
Like,
go.
that's kind of how I approach so many things. I honestly don't even know where I heard about OUX. Like, it's not like I was listening to your podcast and was like, let me try the little course. I was just like, yeah, I mean, let's go.
Nice. And so, what was that experience like for you?
It was really good. It definitely, I should have taken you seriously when you were like, this is a lot. And then I was in it, I was like, this is a lot. But
Yeah, you get
because
your money's worth,
yeah, no,
right?
absolutely. And yeah, I definitely, I mean, my time management isn't always the best. So it definitely was a really good, just how thorough it was really was helpful. Like, I'm a huge visual example person. And so seeing so many examples and you drawing things out made it click. And then just getting feedback from the mentors, like every time they would say something, I'm like, okay. Like, it wasn't like in, grade school where you're like, oh, okay, the comments on the essay. I read that stuff and I'm like, okay, what are they saying? Like, I had Nancy and she was great. And I had all
Oh,
these, Nancy's so sweet.
shout out
Hi,
to Nancy
Nancy.
Vesley.
Nancy, if you're listening, hi. Thank you. And just like we would hop on calls and she would just be so thorough. She'd be like, okay, yeah, let's like draw this out. And so that really hands-on thing was super, super helpful. And I mean, I wanted to do the certification instead of the self-paced, mostly just for accountability, like knowing that I had to post and someone was going to see it. And I don't want to be creating like bad work, that's also associated with like me and my name. And so it helped me accountable to be like, you need to learn these concepts and you need to learn them correctly. And then here are all the different things you need because it was extremely thorough. And so it's just so many light bulbs. Every time I did an exercise, like, oh, I know how I could use this, or this project would have been so much better if I had known this at that time. So now that I'm done with the certification, I'm still using it. It didn't feel like, in college, you take them silly class, like, ah, don't do that anymore. But
Or
here, I'm
at
like,
design conferences, you take
yes.
workshops.
I'm like, I'm gonna do this every day. And then I literally never do. But
Yeah.
here, I actually do think about OUX every day. And I've been weaving it in some way or another. Like, even if I'm not doing the full process, I'm like, let me just make a little matrix. Just we'll throw that little guy in there.
And that is what it's all about. It's like this is not replacing your current process. It's like
Yeah.
you do your process. It's just like now you have all these extra little tools to be like, ooh, like let me throw a little bit of nested object matrix in here. Or ooh, we need to define this thing over here. Or like, and then you can see things like, oh man, like that's a junction object. Those two things are that one thing is actually two
Yes.
things, like being able to parse that out. So I love that you had that experience. And I will say to your credit, I think that you do very good with time management because you were such a star during cohort eight. I mean, I really feel like the concepts clicked for you so easily and so naturally. I mean, I know it was a big challenge, but it did really seem like you were just popping in there and
Oh,
yeah, doing really good work.
that's so nice to hear. I was like, I being like an overachiever, I was like, you're like, cancel all your plans. I was like, no. So I was actually in two other cohorts at that time, and it was,
Oh
I
my
was
goodness. Okay,
running my
you're
own. I was running one where I was you, but live. And I was doing another one where I was a startup founder launching my own software. And so it was too much.
okay, you're really good at time management then. So stop
Yeah.
it. Okay, so what I'm curious to hear from you is, so you said like you'd heard about OUX, so like you didn't like really know how you fit into it, and then you decided, okay, let's just like go and do this thing. And it was, I think, in your words, revolutionary for your process. So right now, like there are a ton of people that are, their like finger has been on the button to enroll in the master class for years, even some of them. Y'all know that are listening, right? That you've been
Yeah,
like,
you know who you are.
I'll just keep listening to the podcast. I'll just keep re reading the newsletter. And they've had it like in their cart, so to speak, for a while. Like, what would you say to those people? Or like, what was your decision-making process like to be like, okay, like I'm still like not exactly sure about this. Like, how did you decide to go ahead and take the plunge? And what would you say to other people who have been considering it?
I think the biggest reason I took the plunge was I'm gonna keep wondering what, like, if I don't do it today or I don't do it next week, I'm still gonna have those same questions of like, oh, is it, what's it about? Is it good? That's not gonna go away. Especially if you're a good UX designer, you should be innately curious. So like, it's gonna be festering. So you might as well just do it. And then, you can do it and then decide, oh yeah, no, not my thing. Or, if you're consuming the stuff, you're clearly already intrigued and you see some semblance of value. So you might as well be able to do it correctly. You like how, if you there's something missing in your process, it, or else you wouldn't, be as intrigued, well, even not even saying whatever you're doing is wrong, but there's clearly something like, ooh, I do wish I could be a little more efficient, or I, complexity is a little silly sometimes for me. So something is already, wiggling around in your head. So just, call to it. It's the answer is in front of you. So I would just say pull the trigger and just see what it is. Answer those questions because it's so useful. It's not even that Sophia didn't pay me to say this. I'm just like really excited about it. And it's just so straightforward. Like I'm such a no BS person. Like I like very useful things. I'm very efficient. There's so many courses I do not take because they sound fluffy. And when I read the descriptions, I'm just like, okay, you're just gonna like prop and be like, oh, have a great day. Just be yourself. And I'm like, no, I need tools. I want to be efficient. This is so straight to the point that it hurts in the best way possible.
Hurt
So
so good.
like if you're hesitant, just save yourself some stress and headache and just give it a shot.
Awesome. Oh, I love that. Thank you so much, Elena. Thank you for saying all that. Okay, so you are creating all sorts of amazing content on LinkedIn. So we will definitely put your link to your LinkedIn in the show notes. Definitely follow Elena there. She's creating lots of like really good OAUX content to kind of continue to wet your whistle and give you some of the overview pieces. And like you're talking about some of the questions that come up. So definitely follow Elena there. Anything else that people need to know about how to get a hold of you, especially if they're interested, if we have any startup clients that have SaaS products, if they want to get a hold of you, where do they go? What do they need to know?
I can give you my email also to put into the show notes.
Okay.
So if you want to reach out via email and I can share my website so you can just take a little peek at the kind of things that I like to work on. But I love working with early stage startups just because there's so many possibilities when you're earlier in the stage. And I want to work with people who like when you think of the problem you're trying to solve, you get mad. Like I want to work with people who really care. They're not just in it for the money. But there's a fire in you that like will not go out unless you start addressing the problem. So I'm here to address it with you, and I'm so excited to use OUX to do it.
Yes, bringing all that passion together. It's gonna be a fiery orchestra right there.
Yes.
Oh, okay. So wonderful. Anything else you want to say before we wrap up?
No, well, just a huge thank you to you. Like, this is so cool to be on here. Like, this is really awesome. And also just for giving me OOUX. Like I talk about this even with non-tech people. I'll be like, hey, OUX, my mom's like, no. She's like, I don't even know what
Well, you know what? I just remember that you said that. So, okay. So I think it was in one of our one-on-ones. I think it was, yes, you were talking about how like you started like OUXing other things in your life. Like, wasn't it like a barbecue or something that you were like, I just am seeing it everywhere and I'm OUXing like all the things because it can apply outside of software.
like yeah, once you open the door, it's like the smallest things. You walk down the street, even when you see bad UX in general, like you just like mutter under your breath. You like get something from the local pizzeria and you're like, oh, this, I'm an object in this. I like write reviews usually on Google Maps, and I'm like, I'm an object right now. And then I'm like creating another object, and I'm like, what? And I'm like, don't worry about it. And then I'm like, have you ever been to a coffee shop? Imagine if you were in a coffee shop and you couldn't tell the difference between a table and the coffee. And then I was like, do you have 5 minutes? So many of my friends have heard the coffee shop analogy. I'm just, and they're like, okay,
Same. Same.
Everyone's like, what? They're like, Lena, you don't even drink coffee. I'm like, yeah, but imagine if I did.
Oh my gosh. I am an object. Don't objectify by yourself, but you are. You are. You are an instance of the human object.
I'm a God user.
You are. Oh my gosh. Okay. So thank you so much for being here. I appreciate this conversation so much, and I appreciate you. And thank you for all of your wonderful nuggets of wisdom. I think that people are going to find this really, really useful. And thanks again for being here.
Absolutely. Great to talk to you.
Okay. Cheers. Thank you so much for listening. I truly hope you enjoyed this episode. Please visit objectorientux.com/podcast for show notes. Our soundtrack is Fighter by Ruby Vell, courtesy of Sugaroo Records. Happy OUXing!